Happy Feast of St. Peter and Paul. Solemnity of St. Peter and Paul. In fact, we have a Paul in studio today. Paul Giona, the great legal mind, with his colleague Chuck Lemandry. I guess I should say Chuck Lemandry and his colleague Paul Giona, right? I
mean, that's more correct,
is
actually.
That,
yes.
Yeah, that is that's what the marquee says, Lemandry and Giona.
We're getting to be more interchangeable all the time, I'm afraid.
Yeah, you kind of look alike.
Oh, I don't know about that. He's better looking. He's certainly a lot younger and skinnier.
Chris Check, president of Catholic Answer, sitting in for Cy Kellett. Say a prayer for Cy. He's a little under the weather. 888-318-7884. Two first-rate legal minds, Chuck Lemandry, Paul Giona, with me here in studio at the G.K. Chesterton Studio at Catholic Answers in San Diego, talking about Supreme Court abortion and religious liberty. Gentlemen, in the first hour, we talked a lot about Dobbs, and I want to wrap up with one thing, and then I want to kind of open up to some of the stuff that you guys, you good gentlemen, are doing on the religious liberty front. And then I also want to see if we can answer a few of these many questions that I said we would get to. And I don't want to make a liar of myself here. So first, real quick, how fragile are the gains? In one presidency, for example, could a new set of justices and could this thing be quickly reversed? What is the cultural, legal, political landscape here? We need to stay in the fight. I know that.
So there's a lot to be said about that. There's dozens and dozens, probably hundreds of articles now thinking about what's going to happen post-Dobbs. So basically, just to give you everybody a big picture idea of where the new battlefronts are going to be, obviously the battle will shift from the federal courts to the state courts. States are going to be basically going on different sides of the issue. Some states like California and New York are going to be very aggressive, passing all sorts of laws that are going to make expand abortion access in ways that are scary. In California, they've been thinking about this for many months. They have formed councils and all these different initiatives that they're pursuing, including potentially even legalizing infanticide. It's debatable, but it seems to be. So you're going to see very blue states doing crazy things. They're going to be challenged in courts. You're going to see the red states sort of restricting abortion completely. And the other side is going to, try to push some legislation through Congress, which seems very unlikely for lots of reasons. There's not sufficient votes. There's currently a filibuster. And there's questions whether there's even legal authority to do that. And even if there is, when a Republican administration takes over, they could undo all that through the federal law. But I think it's very unlikely that the Supreme Court itself would reverse itself again, even if the composition of the court changed. I think that it would be almost impossible. But we're also seeing a very big push for abortion pills to be shipped all over the place, doctors in certain states wanting to do telemedicine and prescribe these pills, which are very dangerous. Most abortions now are done through abortion pills as opposed to surgical abortion. So there's a big question about how can a state regulate, these out-of-state providers? And then, certain states like Texas are trying to impose criminal penalties if a other state or someone else outside their state aids and abets in having a woman travel to get abortions. And then you have California. In states like California, they're not going to be paying women to fly in to get abortions there. So there's going to be – the short answer to your question, Chris, is that the gain is very significant. It's not easily undone. There are a lot of strategies that the other side will choose to implement. There will be a lot of litigation, need for lawyers at the Thomas More side all over the country. But I think that their efforts will be very difficult to their goals will be very difficult to accomplish.
That's really heartening to hear.
Yeah.
That's good to hear.
What I like to second from a legal perspective – as Justice Alito said in the majority decision, Roe v. Wade was not just wrong, but egregiously wrong. It was very weakly reasoned. And even pro-abortion legal scholars have admitted, obviously, there's no constitutional right to abortion. They made it up out of whole cloth. And the dissenting justice on it, Byron White, said it was an exercise of raw judicial power when Roe v. Wade passed. And that's exactly what it was. So, in the face of a very strong, well-reasoned decision in Dobbs, I don't see the United States Supreme Court going back to a Roe framework. In fact, the Roe framework, which set up a trimester system, which Justice Alito pointed out in Dobbs, is not the job of the courts. The courts don't get to say, okay, the first trimester you can regulate it, and maybe in the second trimester, but not the third. That's for the legislature to do. And then when the Casey decision came out in 1992. They even threw out that three-trimester system and came up with a burden, undue burden thing. So even Casey, which upheld Roe, didn't use the same mechanic. So I think the court, United States Supreme Court, is going to be out of the abortion business in terms of at least saying what the states can or cannot do. And what Justice Alito said, it's now up to the people's elective representatives, and Paul is correct. That's where the fight is going to be at this juncture. But a couple of things I did want to make sure that we shared with your listeners is that, you know, more than ever now, states have these safe haven laws. So if a woman finds herself in an unplanned pregnancy and she is worried about her options, you know, one option is always just take the baby to a hospital or most fire stations, no questions asked, they'll take the baby. Plenty of people want to adopt babies. There's long waiting lists, and it's much better than living your entire life feeling guilty about the fact that you killed your own child. Quite frankly, those of us on the pro-life side, we tell it the way it is. It is a human being, and its life is being ended, and that should not be a viable option, particularly when we have all of these pregnancy centers, these pro-life clinics like in San Diego, the Cultural Life Family sure. Services, they'll provide free prenatal care. They'll provide postnatal care. They'll do whatever it needs to help the mother with adoptions or whatever. So there are plenty of options, and people need to know that, because the other side always accuses us of being pro-life only until the baby's born. That's not true. We want to make sure that the mother's taken care of as well as the child.
Oh, yeah. The Catholic Church herself is the largest provider of social services here in the state of California.
That's correct.
As the lovely lady who's with the California Catholic Conference mentioned on the air the other day. And to your point about CULFs, I mean, Culture of Life Family Services, Dr. Delgado is a dear friend of the Apostle. He's on the show regularly. They really do. It just describe them as a crisis pregnancy center. It doesn't even begin to describe right. all of the great work that they're doing in this regard. That is just a bugbear.
Exactly.
That the right or the church or the Catholics, all they care about, they only care about the baby on you know in the womb, but not out in the world.
Exactly. And the other bugbear, of course, is that, well, now you're going to have women dying. No, all of these laws that restrict abortion almost always recognize an extremely rare situation where you have to save the life of the mother. It's not really abortion. You're not trying to kill the child, but they're going to save the life of the mother at the expense of the child, if that's what it's going to take under most of these laws, as well as the rape and incest situation, which you know is extremely rare. And there's usually laws that provide for that as well.
Let's take a couple of calls. First, let's go to Ben in Virginia, watching on YouTube. Ben, welcome to Catholic Answers Live.
Hey, how's it going? So it was briefly mentioned just a second ago, but I had a question kind of about emergency situations, ectopic pregnancies and miscarriages. I've seen so much what I think is disinformation on media outlets such as, you know, Instagram and Twitter, of people just peddling the idea that emergency situations will not be taken care of, that they are considered abortions and therefore will be banned. I was wondering if you could kind of just clear the air on this issue and kind of just comment your thoughts on this topic, because I'm talking to people who are influenced by this kind of propaganda and who
right.
are worried about this. So can you kind of clear the air on this?
I've just
thanks for your question, Ben.
What if
sure.
it happened?
From what I understand from doctors who are in this area, that's never happened. Women are not dying because of complications in childbirth, and doctors are somehow refraining from providing proper care for the mother because of a complication in pregnancy, and they think that that's going to be an abortion, and somehow they're restricted in providing care to the mother. I'm not aware, and I would certainly be interested in hearing if there's any actual cases where that's happened. I think it's a contrived argument, much like, well, we're not talking about a human being. We're just talking about a glob of tissue. Well, we all know that's not true. Just look at the 3D and 4D ultrasounds, which is why Planned Parenthood never wants the mother to see what the baby looks like in the womb they're trying to get her to abort. So that's just have them come up with some examples where that's happened, because I'm not aware of any where a woman has died because of complications in childbirth and any pro-life laws on the books. I'm not aware of it.
Ben, if you go to Catholic.com right now, that particular question of the ectopic pregnancies we address in our 5 pro-abortion arguments and how to answer them, that exact one we treat. Let's go to Leslie in Greenville, South Carolina. Leslie, we're also watching on YouTube. Thank you for calling Catholic Answers Live.
Hey, how y'all doing?
Doing well.
So listen, he kind of answered my question a little bit, but I wanted to go into detail. So here in South Carolina, I've heard a rumor that the governor wants to pursue a case with the Supreme Court to drop things like not just the whole gay marriage thing, but also interracial marriages. How are we as Catholics are supposed to act if that happens?
I don't believe that for a second. Okay, nobody in their right mind is going to talk about banning interracial marriages. There's already plenty of laws on the books, including constitutional amendments. And from a Judeo-Christian perspective, there's certainly no basis for anybody arguing in favor of that. And that was never in this so-called bucket of rights under the right of privacy that somehow they had to allow interracial marriages because they needed a right to privacy to do it. No. The law has always recognized men and women can marry. There may be certain age limitations or limitations in terms of degrees of consanguinity, so you don't have people who are too closely related getting married and then having, you know, birth defects or something. But there was never any basis in the law to ban any type of interracial marriages. So I don't believe for a second any state government is going to challenge that.
Paul?
I think that's absolutely correct.
Thanks for the call, Leslie. Let's try to get one more question before the break. Let's go to Paul in Bristol, Pennsylvania, watching on EWTN.com. Paul, thanks for calling Catholic Answers Live.
Good evening, gentlemen. I just had a question pertaining to protecting the crisis pregnancy centers. And basically, you know, I know the devil's listening.
He always is.
Yeah.
I did one.
even if your lips aren't moving, the devil's listening.
but anyway, I was looking on the online, you know, doing a little bit of research, and there was an act passed. It's called FACE, I believe that's the acronym for it,
right,
in 1994 by Clinton and his gang, which was designed to protect abortion facilities.
Right.
And but if you read it, are you familiar with that? Have you ever heard of it?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked, because we wanted to launch into this, and this gives us the opportunity. The Thomas More Society website has a whole page on this, and we sent a letter out after the draft Dobbs decision came out, and threats were being made by a group called Ruth sent us to Catholic churches and to pro-life clinics, saying that if they did act on their threats and cause disruption to any religious services, not just Catholic ones, but any religious denomination, or interfered with any pro-life clinics, we would sue under the FACE Act. It's a federal law, as you indicated, originally meant to protect abortion clinics, but fortunately, it was amended so that it protects all religious services from disruptions or threats of intimidation and things of that nature, as well as pro-life clinics. And it has some real teeth, because you can not only get injunctions to stop them from acting in such an unlawful manner, but also provides for statutory damages and attorney's fees. So we're all over that. Take a look at the Thomas More Society website. We're using the FACE Act to shut those people down. So all we need is someone to contact us with a case to do it.
888.
The only thing I would...
Oh, go ahead, Paul.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I just wanted to make note of one thing, and that is the key, I think, to turn the screw on these people is to strip them of their anonymity. We need to get their identification. So photographs of individuals, license plates, anything you can get to identify these people that are raising hell.
I agree. If they come into churches, get your cell phone cameras. We need to find out who they are, because they're hard to track down on the internet. They're posting all these threats and encouraging people to go out and vandalize churches and even threatening people's lives. And the more radical group that really is a domestic terrorist, this, what is it, Jane's Revenge or something like that, I think they call themselves, which are calling for violence. You know, you try to track them down on the internet, it's not easy, because there's no one individual that seems to be identifiable with them. But if you catch them in the act, you know, people have these, we put up security cameras around our office. You get these people on camera, get it to the police, find a way to identify them. We'll go after them that way. So you're absolutely correct, and I thank you for the call.
And can I follow up here real quick? Is there an argument that some of this behavior constitutes insurrection? So, for example, when that fellow made an attempt on the life of Justice Kavanaugh, I assume his motive was to somehow disrupt this decision. Is that the kind of thing that legally... I'm revealing my legal ignorance here, but is that the kind of thing that legally could be argued as insurrection? I mean, that's a decision of one of the branches of the federal
government. Right. There's all kinds of criminal laws, I think, that would come to bear to prosecute someone like that is being prosecuted, you know, starting with, common assault and battery. But then there's law specifically protecting judges from any type of undue influence or intimidation, let alone a death threat type situation like that. So I don't know if you need to go insofar as would it be an insurrection if it's one person acting. I think of an insurrection as more of a movement. But to be honest with you, I haven't researched that specific issue. But I can tell you under the FACE Act with regard to churches and pro-life clinics, there are laws specifically on the books. And I know there's laws on the book to protect judges and other public officials.
It is domestic terrorism. I mean, what we're seeing, not with the leaked opinion and trying to attempt, you know, I think that we've looked into that. And I think that a lot of the threats and intimidation would qualify probably as domestic terrorism.
888-318-7884. Chris Check sitting in for Cy Kellett. Chuck Lemandry, Paul Jonah, my guests. My friend, the early bird opportunity to sign up for the Catholic Answers Conference at the end of September here in San Diego will expire this Friday. And if you enter the code EARLY, if you register at CatholicAnswersConference.com by Friday at midnight, you will save $50. But here is a way that you can save $70, 70, and that is by becoming, or you already are, a member of the Catholic Answers Society 315. The Catholic Answers Society 315, those are our monthly supporters. So I'm inviting you now to become a member of Society 315. Also at the conference, you will be invited to a Society members only reception. So join today, get all the information on club benefits, t-shirt, car magnet. I have one myself, one of each. The shop discount, the conference discount. Visit, go to Catholic.com and join Society 315. If you're already a member, send us an email, society315@catholic.com, to get the code. That's society315@catholic.com to get the code, or sign up for Society 315 at cassociety315.com. That's cassociety315.com. Right back after this.
Stay with us for more Catholic Answers Live.
The Aquinas Writing Advantage program is part of Homeschool Connections' set of online courses for your Catholic homeschool. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Hi, I'm Joan Ebestinski, station manager at Holy Family Radio in Central Pennsylvania. When I found out about Catholic Radio, I knew that God wanted me to be a part of it, and I'm glad I am. Catholic Radio makes a difference in people's lives. It has the power to lead others to the truth of Christ and His church. With Catholic Radio, we can nourish our Catholic family and share our faith with others.
The world needs EWTN Catholic Radio, now more than ever.
Underwriting by Great Catholic Music.
Great Catholic Music, your one-of-a-kind streaming platform for traditional Catholic hymns and contemporary favorites 24 hours a day. Music that soothes the soul, that's safe for the whole family to listen to. What a relief. Great Catholic Music. Download the free mobile app or listen on any Alexa-enabled device or write from your PC or tablet at greatcatholicmusic.com. Great Catholic Music, melodies for the soul.
Catholic Answers Live. Chris Check sitting in for Cy Kellett, 888-318-7884. I'm sorry, my guests were distracting me there from my duties as host. 888-318-7884, Chuck Lemandry and Paul Jonah. Gentlemen, I want to open up our conversation beyond Dobbs, beyond abortion, to the work that you all do in the moral legal sphere with respect to the defense of the church, the defense of religious liberties, the defense of people's firmly held moral principles. And you've been fighting these kinds of fights for a very, very long time. Chuck, you said at the break, how many churches burned here?
Yeah, I had read the USCCB released statistics even before the Dobbs decision came out of over 140 Catholic churches have been attacked, either vandalized or burned since May 2020. But then I know at least two more were burned to the ground or seriously damaged over the weekend, one in Virginia, one in West Virginia. One was a very old church from, the mid-1800s.
Oh, my goodness.
A shame. Yeah, so that's why we want people to know that we're the Thomas More Society, with lawyers all over the country, are available to come to their aid if that type of situation arises.
If I'm not mistaken, the mission in Los Angeles, San Gabriel, that was the object of arson.
That was one of them as well. And then, of course, the disruption of the church services after the leaked draft decision in Dobbs. There was such an incident at the Newark Cathedral there in Los Angeles where this group, Ruth Sent Us, went in there and tried to disrupt the service, and they did it. I think last year or the year before in San Francisco, where there's a very serious disruption. They made it all the way up to the altar where people were receiving communion. So it was a real act of sacrilege. But fortunately, the one that was more recent in Los Angeles, the ushers were alert and ready for it and stopped them as they were trying to proceed up the center aisle. And now they need to be more alert and not let them in the church at all.
Yeah, praise God. Let's stay here in California because, of course, our dear state never fails to provide you guys with work. In the middle of the COVID pandemic, you were instrumental in getting churches reopened here in California. Tell me about that, Paul.
Well, we had three cases. It was early in the pandemic. We were hoping to represent a Catholic bishop, but we ended up representing a Protestant. He calls himself a bishop, and Bishop Hodges, Pastor Hodges, and his case went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. I think three times in the span of a year. Initially, when before Justice Ginsburg passed, it was a harder court. We actually lost initially, and then when Justice Barrett replaced her, we made our way back up there, and ultimately they struck down the indoor worship ban in California. Before that, we actually had represented a Catholic priest with the Society, St. Pius X, who challenged the same restrictions, but for his chapels, and he had five of them, and he got the first injunction in the state. And it would only apply to his churches, though, because there wasn't appealed. And then we represented Pastor John MacArthur, who was defying all of the regulations, having indoor services with 10,000 people every Sunday, shoulder to shoulder. And they were fining him. They were revoking his lease. They were trying to hold him in contempt. And because of the results we obtained in those other cases, he ended up emerging victorious as well. And they ended up paying his attorney's fees. And actually, all those cases, the state had to fork out attorney's fees for the Thomas More Society paying to have us fight those cases. So it was a tremendous victory. All glory to God, of course. But it was pretty much consumed our practice for one full year.
So was the matter of all three of these cases essentially the same? We're opened, we're having indoor mass, we're having indoor services, as the case may be, and it is a violation of our religious liberty under the First Amendment. Was that the gist of it?
Yes. I mean, their approaches were different. Bishop Art Hodges, a Pentecostal bishop who I think presides over 100 churches, Pentecostal churches in California, was trying to follow all the rules with social distancing and mass. It went even further. He required temperature checks and everything else, but that was not enough under this regime from Governor Newsom, edicts on high, when they said you couldn't meet indoors at all, even though he was taking far more precautions than were even required by strict government mandates. But compared to this evangelical megachurch with John MacArthur, he just said, no, I'm not going to follow it. You've got no jurisdiction over me. So they had no mass, no social distancing. They were singing, 10,000 people. And again, by the grace of God, he was going to be held in contempt. They were threatening him with arrest and huge fines and having to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars in attorney's fees. But because we were successful with U.S. Supreme Court, the county of Los Angeles, state of California, had to back off and end up, as Paul's saying, paying his attorney's fees. But the upshot of it is, and as I've heard Paul say often, basically the end result is if Costco is open, the churches are open. What they said in South Bay, you're not going to treat the churches any worse than any compular, any comparable secular activity. And that includes not just marijuana dispensaries and liquor stores, but Walmart, Costco, major transportation hubs. So they'll have to shut down everything before they ever shut down the churches again. And we know that's not going to happen. So, again, by the grace of God, that was a huge victory for the state of California. And it's 40 million people.
Yeah, and God bless you for that. And the example that you've set for other states as well.
Right. It's a national decision.
Yeah.
It's not just California.
888-318-7884 or Catholic Answers Live. Register for the Catholic Answers Conference at CatholicAnswersConference.com. Right back after this.
Did you know you can access Catholic Answers Live right from your phone or other mobile device? Download the Catholic Answers Live app today. The Catholic Answers Live app, available now on iOS and Android.
Here's a question. Is it really possible to be friends with someone who died 2,000 years ago? Maybe the problem is that we've grown way too comfortable with the story of Jesus. Nice man, right? Taught us to love one another, said not to judge people. We celebrate his birthday every year. It's time to put away this small, safe version of Jesus, says Cy Kellett. Nobody that bland could have transformed the world. In A Teacher of Strange Things, Cy presents Jesus Christ undiluted by sentiment, with all his radical words and deeds uncensored. Do you know someone, your son or daughter perhaps, or maybe your mom or dad, who needs the friendship of Jesus Christ? Do you? Order your copy of A Teacher of Strange Things by visiting shop.catholic.com today or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you. Have you enrolled in the Catholic Answers School of Apologetics? Let me ask you a more important question. Do you believe as a Catholic that you have an obligation to share the Catholic faith? In fact, the Church has answered this question, and the answer is that all confirmed Catholics are obliged to share the faith. It's actually in canon law. Catholic Answers is here to help you fulfill that obligation. Our School of Apologetics courses will equip you to help all the people you come in contact with understand what the Church teaches and why. A great place to start is with all the Catholics in your life. Learn the art of apologetics from the best of the best and start sharing the gospel today. Visit schoolofapologetics.com. That's schoolofapologetics.com.
Tomorrow on Mortal Life, the life you were meant to live.
We'll look at how the theology of the body can help you live a more abundant life.
That's tomorrow on Mortal Life, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 Central on EWTN Radio.
Now back to Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live, Chris Check sitting in for Cy Kellett. Lots of callers, gentlemen. Let's go to John in New York on Twitch. John, welcome to Catholic Answers Live.
Hi, gentlemen.
Hey.
My question here about the Supreme Court issue is that now that we're reinforcing the concept that the government can have power over our bodies, such as they have the power to administer the death sentence to us, which I completely disagree with. And also back in the 60s, Georgia passed a law mandating that if women were on government assistance and they had children, they were forcibly sterilized, non-reversible. So since we have a history of doing this, and this is now part of the process that we're reinforcing this, why couldn't we now pass laws mandating that male children get have a vasectomy done to them that is reversible, until they get a partner that's willing to state that they're willing to now have children with this man.
Yeah.
And then it gets reversed. And then once they have children, then it gets put into effect again. See, it seems like women are just rolling over and taking it when we do this to them.
Yeah,
men will take up arms to protect themselves.
Yeah, John, let me, I think I have the gist of your question here, and I want to give these gentlemen a chance to answer it. So two questions here, guys. First of all, is this court decision forcing women to have children?
No.
And then second of all, is this a possibility? I mean, the question of sterilizations is a real one in American history, and is there some danger of this?
I don't think so. And in fact, there's a misconception about what the Dobbs case holds. It doesn't say women don't have a right to choose at all. It just says the Supreme Court isn't supposed to be making that decision because it has no basis in the Constitution to do so. And in finding a Roe v. Wade, they did. They just made it up. So they're saying it goes back to the states, which were the ones who were regulating it before. 26 states supported overturning Roe v. Wade, so presumably they'll have more restrictive abortion laws, but we don't know what those will be. Some states like Texas or Florida may ban it completely. Others, after the first trimester, we'll have to see. But some states, again, like California and New York, they're expanding abortion rights. California's saying, we'll pay to fly women in from other states if they can't get an abortion in their state. We'll pay for it to come have it in California. So to be suggesting that somehow now women are left without options, and Paul had indicated that we don't know what is going to happen with these chemical abortions, which were already on the rise over surgical abortions anyhow. Are they going to be sending these chemical abortion pills into states that otherwise outlawed abortions? But separate apart from that issue, I don't quite understand the connection you're trying to make. No one's forcing anyone to have an abortion. Certainly no one's going to force any man to have a vasectomy. And those laws that had been on the books at one time, there was one as well, in landmark case, and I'm sorry the name escapes me, where the Supreme Court justice said three generations of imbeciles is enough, and they authorized the sterilization of a woman who was predisposed to having children with this mental defect. Subsequent court said that was the wrong decision. You can't do that. You can't interfere with people's bodily integrity and autonomy that way. And they're not going to sterilize people. They're not going to force implants of Norco or whatever, Norplant, whatever it's called. That may have been a dark side of the past. There has been bad decisions. Brown versus Board of Education, you know, reverse the Plessy v. Ferguson, which was separate but equal. There's been bad decisions, but they've been reversed. And there's no reason to think they're going to be resurrected. So, no, I don't see anybody being forced to have a surgical procedure. And, in fact, Paul and I are very much involved in even fighting for people's bodily integrity in terms of exercising their religious liberty interests and not having the current COVID vaccines, because that too, is intruding on people's personal rights and freedom, particularly if they have a religious objection. So, and we're gaining traction on those issues. So I don't see that as being a problem.
Thanks for the call, John. That's good news. Gentlemen, you have a you have a case that's about to go to trial is next week or next month?
I think it's like 3 or 4 weeks, yeah.
And it's
July 25th.
It's one of these bakery wedding cases. I actually thought those were sort of decided by a case in Colorado or something.
Yeah.
So educate me.
Most people thought that Colorado case, the masterpiece case, sort of resolved this, but really the Supreme Court only addressed, you know, ruled in favor of the baker on narrow grounds, saying that the commission there acted with hostility, and that was how they resolved it. They never answered the fundamental question, which is the religious liberty question. Does the baker have a constitutional right to decline an order, a custom order, that would force him to make a message or send a message that violates his sincere religious beliefs? And the court kind of punted on that. Our case, actually, which has been going on for 5 years, the trial court actually did rule on that question early on in the case, but the state of California is pursuing to harass this really wonderful, devout Christian lady in Bakersfield, Kathy Miller, who has a bakery, and she's, you know, she loves the Lord, and she it's very obvious when you walk in. She's got Christian art and Christian music playing, and And she, for her, marriage is a sacred union between one man and one woman, and she'll never do anything to offend, you know, our Lord. And so she declines those orders, and she does it in a respectful and loving way by referring the customers to another bakery that's willing to make those cakes. But the state has challenged whether she's allowed to do that. They want her to either make those cakes or get out of the wedding business, and they've been persecuting her for 5 years now. And finally, the case is going to trial, and we have a very good trial court judge who... The prior judge before him was also good, and he ruled favorably for Kathy Miller. And so we're quite confident that we'll, you know, that she will prevail in this case. It's going to be set for trial July 25th, and Chuck probably...
This will be a matter then of California law?
We are raising the federal constitution as well as the state constitution as defenses for Kathy. So ultimately, it will make its way up the California courts of appeal and eventually possibly to the U.S. Supreme Court. But there is a case pending right now at the U.S. Supreme Court that could resolve this question for Kathy and for other people. It's called 303 Creative. It deals with the rights and the web design context in this space. So it could resolve the question potentially. But so we're...
You know, I want to hear what you have to say, Chuck, but I have to say, and I really don't want to sound like... I mean, we were talking at the break, I think, about this or before the show. This seems to me so obviously to be just motivated by a hatred of Christianity. If in fact this woman is politely recommending and referring her clients to other bakers in Bakersfield, and by the way, if they were having someone's birthday party, she would be happy to bake for them, probably.
Right.
Yeah, and so this seems to me obviously to be just directed an animosity at Christianity. If that's true, is that fundamental to the legal argument of the case?
Go ahead.
It is very much a part of our legal argument, and you are correct. Our client has gay customers. She's had gay employees. She's got no problem serving people regardless of their sexual orientation in any context other than marriage, which she sees as, again, divinely ordained by God as one man and one woman. And when she meets with customers who come in and want to buy a wedding cake, she's actually got a packet she gives them with Bible verses and talks about the significance of the wedding cake in terms of a covenantal marriage from a Christian perspective. And people are generally very receptive to that. That's where she is coming from. The same-sex couple in this particular case, even though our client was very polite and offered the accommodation, took great offense. And they were with two gay men who came in with them, and they grabbed the clipboard out of our client's hand, and they immediately took to social media, and literally within 2-3 hours, the parking lot was full of news media, and our clients were just getting all this hate mail being sent to them on their computers. In fact, people would call and say, I'm going to send a picture of a cake I want you to make, which is not unusual. And then they open it up, and it's this most vulgar gay pornography. And these are young girls in their 20s working in the shop being exposed to. Then there are death threats. One of the employees, they threatened to rape someone, and then they did. I mean, how can you get more violent than that? Somebody who was employees was raped leaving the shop at night. So our client's car is broken into, her computer was stolen, and always they're saying they're coming after you, and they did. So it has been nothing short of hell on wheels for them in terms of what they've had to deal with. So hatred of Christianity, absolutely. Now, are the government lawyers? They're very polite. They're very professional. But yet, when they deposed our client, they were saying, well, you follow the Bible. Does that mean that you don't eat pork or shellfish? Because the Old Testament said, you know, those kinds of questions, which our client took it.
That's just sophistry.
Well, exactly. And of course, those dealt with dietary restrictions and ceremonial customs and things of a nature that don't necessarily apply. Whereas, of course, as Catholic answers can tell better than anyone, human nature hasn't changed, and basic moral code, as represented by the Ten Commandments and teachings and magisterial teachings of our church, haven't changed. And there is a real distinction when it comes to sexual morality that has not changed. So our client is following her conscience, and she's being persecuted for it. And of course, they play the race card and say, well, the Bible justified. They asked her that in deposition, racism and suppressing African Americans as well. The initials, no. Nobody knows their Bible knows that did not happen. You can't justify, oh, they said the interracial marriage, like the last guy just asked. No, the Bible doesn't justify any bans on interracial marriage. So, yeah, they were overtly hostile to our Judeo-Christian worldview. They acted like they were being polite about it in the approach. But nonetheless, I think there is an undercurrent of hostility. And I think from the point of the same-sex couple, I'll just say it, I think there's guilt being projected, and they are looking, as you said, Chris, for approbation from society. And if you don't agree with them and are willing to celebrate, remember they just wanted tolerance before.
Right.
Now you have to actually celebrate, and you have to go through this artistic process with them of designing a cake to their liking, which, by the way, is very elaborate. You know, you got to choose the size, the taste, the color, the texture. Do you want decorations? Do you want writing on it? Do you have to say, God bless this gay marriage on the cake, if that's what they want? So there are real important legal questions being raised in terms of free speech and free exercise of religion, but it is very much part of a broader legal battle that we predicted would happen if same-sex marriage became law. And we're fighting for our religious freedom that's fundamental under the First Amendment.
One
so anyhow,
point,
go ahead.
Though, is that in the at the Supreme Court and the California Supreme Court, when they legalized same-sex marriage, they promised this would never happen. They
right.
said that this ruling will not interfere with the, you know, the rights of religious people of faith to advocate vigorously and live out their faith, and it won't affect their religious liberty. I mean, it was pretty much black and white explaining that, but here we are today, and obviously that's an open question, it seems.
The show is Catholic Answers Live. We're going to be right back after this break. My friends, visit. Actually, here's what I want you to do. Bookmark Catholic.com. For the next couple of weeks, make Catholic.com your go-to spot online for up-to-date content on pro-life, on religious liberty issues. We're going to have fresh content going up every single day. And right now, we have a collection of articles. We call them five pro-abortion arguments and how to answer them that are going to equip you for the battle ahead, whether it's conversations that you're having with loved ones, family members, friends, co-workers. You all are a vital part of this conversation. There are only two Chuck Lemandries and Paul Jonas in the world, right? There's only what, two Trent Horns and Joe Heschmeyers, right? Or one Cy Kellett, whatever it is. But every one of us has an obligation to be articulate about these issues, and Catholic Answers is equipping you to do it. All you have to do is visit Catholic.com, spend a little bit of time there, and then say some prayers, and then engage in charity. Visit Catholic.com today. Bookmark it right back after this.
You're listening to Catholic Answers Live. Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
The most original and exclusive Catholic content is on EWTN Radio.
I pray that EWTN News In Depth will help the everyday life of everyday Catholics by bringing them the news that matters to them and helping them to have the information at their fingertips for whatever it is that they need to be able to engage with the world confidently with their faith.
EWTN News In Depth with Montse Alvarado, Friday night, 8 Eastern on EWTN Television and Radio.
A lot of people think that street evangelization involves yelling out of a bullhorn telling people that they're going to hell. Not so with St. Paul's Street Evangelization. Our methods are non-confrontational and effective. We simply offer information on the Catholic faith, along with rosaries, miraculous medals, and prayer. Pope Francis wrote about how beautiful it is to see street preachers joyfully bringing Jesus to every corner of the earth. Street evangelization is fun and fruitful. Join us today at streetevangelization.com.
Catholic Answers Live. Boy, gentlemen, I told you that 2 hours was going to go by quickly. We're down to the last quarter of an hour here. I'm really grateful that you all came over to the studio here. I'm having a great time. I hope you are. I know our listeners are learning a great deal. Paul, you were saying in the break, you guys have, it's not just the Dobbs case, the win there, we're celebrating. There have been some wins that you and Chuck have had in this space. Starting with Junipero Serra, a saint very dear to me, as you know, and of course, one of Catholic Answers and California's patrons, our founding father. I still call him our founding father.
Sure, and rightfully so.
Yeah, no, he is the political infrastructure, or if you will, or geopolitical map of California is the mission system.
That's correct. I mean,
but he has been under assault here, and you've had a couple of opportunities to defend him, Paul.
Yes. So there was a school here, a public school named after him because of—
Very close to Catholic Answers, yeah. right over here in Tierra Santa.
Yeah. Because he is the founding father and because he has such a significant historical—
Yeah, I just want to say again, this was a public high school in the 50s named after Junipero Serra.
Right.
We talk about the devolution of the culture.
Right. Yeah. And after, you know, Chuck was talking about churches being burned down, after that started in 2020 with the Black Lives Matter riots, the principal of the school is a lady named Dr. Erica Renfrey, who used that as an opportunity. She's supposedly Catholic, by the way. She used that as an opportunity to have a discussion about changing the name because statues of Junipero Serra were being torn down. So she actually used that to justify, let's change the name of the school named after such a terrible guy, as evidenced by the fact that the statues are being torn down. So she manipulated polls, and she had a very elaborate strategy where she kind of used false information about the saint to sort of have this discussion. No one was really interested in changing the name. She kind of manufactured this process at the school. And it's very complicated factually, so I don't want to get into all the details, but basically very very deceptive, very unlawful activity that she engaged in. And to achieve the result, which she did by convincing the San Diego Unified School District to vote to approve this name change, they changed the renaming rules in the middle of the process. They lied to people about the polls. It was really ridiculous. So we're challenging that. We're in it for the long run because we tried to get an injunction stopping the renaming. The court wasn't inclined to do that. So we're still asking for a permanent injunction ultimately. But so that case is ongoing. But we do have
You have some cultural support here, right? Because Tierra Santa, where that school is, there's a lot of military housing over there, and you tend to have a kind of— we're proud.
One of the problems is they did not poll the people that lived in the community, which strongly supported maintaining the name. Many of them have contributed to the school over the years. Many graduated or sent kids there, and there was a real affinity with the name of the school. And plus, Tierra Santa is helping Holy Ground. It was all part of the mission territory.
System. Yes, it was. Yeah.
That's exactly right. And one of the saddest parts is the way they tried to rewrite history. You know better than anyone, Chris, being an expert in these areas, and accusing Father Junipero Serra of engaging in genocide and such, which is ridiculous because he was one of the strongest, if not the greatest, champion of the indigenous peoples, walking all the way down to Mexico City with a bad leg in order to get a Bill of Rights written
That particular document, Chuck, to which you refer, is really the first legal document of the state of California, and it is a defense of the natives and their rights.
Right. I think it predated the Bill of Rights to our own Constitution. That while things were going on the East Coast of the United States, he was doing everything to preserve exactly what they're accusing him of doing, the opposite of, by being responsible. And then when it came right down to it, they really accused him of was killing off the indigenous people's gods by forcing Christianity on them. Of course, nobody was forced to be baptized.
No.
And those gods, which Paul's going to talk about in the next case here, some of them were pretty violent. The Aztec gods that we had to take on in another case, they were sacrificing human beings to. But anyhow, they take exception to the fact that Christianity was brought here when it comes right down to it. And he's responsible for doing that, which comes back to your point of the strong anti-Christian sentiment that's driving a lot of these people.
Yeah, it's an animus. Let's go to that, Paul, the Aztec gods.
Yeah,
by the way, the Aztecs probably sacrificed human persons at a rate greater than any other, if we want to say, civilization. I mean, and in some ways, they were quite civilized. Yeah. They probably bathed more than the Spanish conquistadors. I mean, they had steam baths and these, you know, the, and Tenochtitlan, I mean, it was a pretty remarkable city there and everything. But it's true. There's reason to believe on some occasions, you know, tens of thousands over the course of a weekend.
Look at the mountains, the skulls are still
unearthing. Oh, I know. You can't even deny it.
No.
The archaeological evidence is overwhelming.
Staggering.
Yeah.
So there was the California State Board of Education decided to pass this model curriculum for ethnic studies, and their co-chair was this guy named Tolteca Cuatin, who authored a book called Rethinking Ethnic Studies, and his pitch was that the Christians who came out west killed off the indigenous gods, and we need to, as a people, make up for that by saying their names in school. And so he created some hip hop song that the kids would sing before class starts, which would invoke the names of these five specific deities, give them praise, thanksgiving, and ask for their intercession, but in like a fun hip hop way that a kid wouldn't fully understand. So
that's still a prayer, though, right?
Right.
You praise, petition, thanksgiving. Yes. I mean, it's a prayer.
So we ultimately, you know, filed a lawsuit when after the church cases wound up, and we were surprised no one else did, by the way. But we got those. The state saw the writing on the wall, and they agreed to remove those chants and pay attorney's fees, and they caved pretty fast. But the point is, Chris, why I think that's important is that, you know, Chuck was doing this work for a long time before I joined him, and he was winning cases. These cases are winnable, whether they're on the Supreme Court or, you know, California. We just need people to stand up and fight back. You know, the Children of Immaculate Heart case is another example of
case. Let's talk about that. Grace Williams, our mutual friend, runs an apostolate here in San Diego where she rescues minor girls and adult women from the life of street trafficking, which is to borrow your word, Chuck, a staggering problem here in Southern California, and I think in most major metropolitan areas now in the United States. And she has set up a home where these girls can be rehabilitated from the horrible lives that they have been forced to lead at a very young age, and to get this home licensed has been an ordeal for them because it's a Catholic institution.
Yeah, there's a massive need for the work she's doing. And if you know Grace, if you're from San Diego, you know she's pretty much a saintly woman.
Oh, and she's about this big. I mean, she's like...
Yeah. So the fact that they would actually... They should be begging her or people like her to open these homes, which they, you know, there's a huge need for this. But instead of, you know, promptly processing her application, they realized she was a devout Catholic, and they started putting roadblocks after they spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on this home trying to ask her fake hypotheticals about how she would handle girls that wanted to, you know, transition from one gender to another, or how she would handle a girl who wanted to get an abortion, contraception. I mean, there's easy solutions.
Similar to the kind of depositions that that the state was putting your Baker client through.
Yeah, the message they were sending was they'd rather leave these girls on the streets rather than with a good, devout Catholic. So it was a really despicable thing. And once that was exposed, and once, you know, we filed a lawsuit, and ultimately they ended up, you know, resolving the case, giving her a license, and their home has been open for a few years now. So thanks be to God. But the fact that she had to go through that process of hiring lawyers to sue the state just shows the depths of the evil that we're dealing with on the other side. So,
yeah, it's pretty extraordinary. What we've got a couple of minutes left. What, first of all, how can our listeners find out about the good work that you all are doing? And then what else, what's coming up in the future?
Chuck, you want to take that?
Sure. The Thomas More Society has a website, www.thomasmore, spelled M-O-R-E.
Yeah, not two O's.
Not O's. Not two O's, as many people think.
By the way, we just celebrated his great feast.
We did.
You know, last week.
Yeah.
The great defender of marriage.
Exactly correct. And a great inspiration to me. And like I said, the first time I had the privilege of being at Catholic Answers around 2000 was talking about St. Thomas More. So have me back sometime to talk about him.
Absolutely.
He's my favorite topic. But you could learn more about the cases we've talked about here today and others that are in the works. There's just more work than any one firm can handle. There are other good public interest law firms that work kind of the tip of the spear here in California, where it appears to be the greatest need because it's the most populous state, and it's one that's been most progressive in many areas that are good and then not so good. And we tend to get involved in trying to slow or stop in the ways that have been not so good, and there's plenty of those. One case we're about to file is for a woman who worked in a daycare center with kids 1 to 5 years old, and they're forcing her now to read books about same-sex parenting to these little kids. Even though there's other teachers there that will do it, she asked if she can have accommodation and not read those particular books or read others, which is what she's been doing for years. And this is a very huge daycare operation. They've got like 7,000 locations. And they said, no, you have to read them or you have to leave.
ThomasMoreSociety.org.
That's
correct.
That
right? And you guys both do public speaking, too. You invite one of these gentlemen to come and address your group. I'm so grateful to you for the time that you made. Catholic Answers Live, sitting in this chair tomorrow, Dave Matheson. I'll be in on Friday, unless, God willing, Cy Kellett is back. God bless you all. Thank you for your prayers.